the latest research, tools, and common sense tips you need to get and stay healthy. It's Talk Healthy Today. Here's Lisa Davis.
Recently, I became friends with a man who went through a whole lot of trouble with his back. He tried everything in the book, and eventually he had a spinal fusion, but he had a surgery. Prior to that, he had a year where it hurt to even put his socks on, and it just broke my heart listening to what's going on. Well, this is not an uncommon scenario. There are so many people with back pain, too many to count at this point, although we do have some statistics, which we'll jump into when we begin the show. I want to bring in the wonderful Catherine Jacobson Raymond. We're going to be talking about her wonderful book, Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very good.
You know, when I read your book in the introduction, A Terrible Affliction, when I went looking for a solution, I found a much bigger problem. And it kind of reminded me of the friend that I just mentioned, just having, you know, spending a fortune on chiropractic, acupuncture. You talk about physical therapy and massage and how you thought it would be straightforward to fix your back. And I thought this was so poignant. You're right. Back pain treatment was a microcosm of everything that was wrong with the healthcare system. That is powerful, Catherine.
Well, you know, thank you. But it's also absolutely true.
Yes.
You know, what happens to us when we're in pain is we are very, very bad decision makers. You know, people in pain just don't make good decisions. There's a lot of desperation associated with it, and it's very understandable because particularly in the case of back pain, we have this sense that it is going to be definitely life-changing and possibly life-ending. You know, if you wake up in the middle of the night with the world's worst cramp in your leg, and it, you know, basically it throws you out of bed, you don't really ever think, I might die from this. I might not be able to go to work or take care of my family. I mean, this is a pain that is, if you've ever had a leg cramp, and most of us have, you know, that it's severe, but it does not have that same impact on us psychologically as back pain does. And so when we are afflicted and everything hurts, we get desperate. And I always said that during the time that I was trying to work this out, I would have jumped on a gurney in Times Square if someone told me that was going to do it.
Yeah, it is really debilitating. I mean, I've been having these spasms in my lower to mid back on the right hand side. And I mean, I'm like a cat. I'm going up against a chair and I'm like rubbing on my back and I'm trying to like shove anything in it I can. And I'm digging my hand and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, it's so uncomfortable. And if you have, I can't even imagine having that chronically, right? Well, talk to us about your situation. What happened with you? When did it all start?
Well, you know, I grew to a fairly tall height when I was a very young teenager. And I think I was not particularly well muscled. I really was a skinny kind of individual. And I wasn't really strong enough to support my entire skeleton. So I rode horses and I took a flying fall off of one of them when I was 16. Of course, I fell off many horses, but this was spectacular, right onto my right hip, going very fast. And when I stood up, I could barely use my right hip. And because I was 16 and I had a summer job and I was going to keep that summer job, you know, come hell or high water, I didn't do any rehab. I just dragged my leg around for a while, and eventually things seemed to straighten out. But they never really did. And by the time I had my two children, 3.5 years apart, I was pretty decked with sciatica. And then when my first book was published, and I went on tour for almost 1.5 years, and I had no idea how I was going to make it through that because I was in a lot of pain, and my leg was very weak. And I wasn't working out, and things were going south really fast. And that's when I started to try to figure out what really was going on.
And when you try to figure out what was going on, you discovered so much more, not just for you, but for millions and millions of people.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just like everybody else, except for I happened to be an investigative reporter, so that is, that does make me different. But when I went into this initially, I was behaving like any chronic back pain patient who had to work for a living, had a family to take care of, was, you know, was desperate to cope. And so, you know, I'd already been through several rounds of physical therapy, which I discuss in the book, and those had, quote unquote, failed, very possibly because I never did the exercises, which is a common problem.
It's with so important.
And
it makes a difference, I tell you.
Well, it can make a difference. Depends on the physical therapist and what you're being instructed to do. And then I'd been to chiropractors and I'd been adjusted, you know, more than was really safe for me. And I had tried various types of exercise, Pilates mat classes where I really kind of abused my spine rolling in a ball, and various other things as well. And when I decided I have to do something about this, I went to see my primary care doctor and I said, okay, so I've been through this, 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 and this. And he said, all right, how about some physical therapy? And I'm like, did you not hear what I just said? Because I've been through several rounds of this already.
Oh,
and he said, oh, okay, I'll send you for an MRI. And I said, great, I've achieved what I set out to do. And I went and I had the MRI and I heard back in about a week from my doctor's receptionist that the report read that I had degenerative disc disease and several black discs and a couple of disc herniations. And I thought, I had nothing to compare that to. And I thought, just like most people who hear that kind of report, oh my gosh, I have a serious problem and this needs to be addressed right away or I am going to be, you know, disabled and I must do something about it right away. And what I didn't know about that report is that if you sampled a large group of people anywhere near my age group, which at that time was in the vicinity of 50, you would find just the same things on the report and these would not be indicative of that these were the pain generators. Because people who have no back pain have the same report. But did I know that? Did anyone tell me that? Absolutely not. And I went to see the local community spine surgeon, and community is a term that sounds very generous and warm and cozy, but a community spine surgeon is someone who's not affiliated with a teaching hospital and must make a living, keep the lights on, by doing spine surgery. Didn't know that either. And when I got in there and the place was jam-packed and there were literally people sitting on the floor in the reception area, I thought, oh my gosh, this guy must be fantastic because look at all the patients. Well, also didn't know that workers' comp often has arrangements where patients are sent to specific surgeons. And I should have noticed that because I live in a community where you don't see too many people in doctor's offices who have obviously just come off a construction site. But in this case, the place was full of them. And they were obviously being sent there by someone. And I spent a good deal of time fooling around with different spine surgeons and their evaluations. And eventually, when that was not working out, I made the assumption that I wasn't getting anywhere because none of these people were smart or efficient enough to really help me. And that's a mistake, too, and a common one, because you hear things like, well, I'm not sure I know what to do to help you, or I don't really have an answer for you. And most chronic back pain patients will say, well, you know, this medical group, they're just not on top of it. They're not far ahead enough. They're not on the cutting edge, and maybe they're just not smart enough, and we're going to have to find somebody better. And I made that mistake, too, instead of hearing what was potentially really being said, which is, we're not sure how to proceed most effectively with you, meaning maybe surgery is not going to necessarily be what you need. I did not hear that. I heard, we don't know what to do, find someone else. And I went off to a facility where they do minimally invasive spine surgery, and I had a procedure there that was an outpatient procedure, ambulatory surgery center type of procedure. And it was supposed to be minimally invasive, but in fact, everything about it was about the same as a standard conventional microdiscectomy, except for the fact that I was not in a hospital. And I was expected to basically take care of myself afterwards, which I was not at all capable of doing. So it was that was very challenging. For a while, I thought that things had improved. It turned out that that was primarily the nice container full of oxycodone that they had given me.
Oh.
And when I ran out of that in 2 weeks, I was smart enough not to try to refill it. But I went through very serious withdrawal for about a week that felt like having a terrible case of anxiety and the flu combined. I didn't know that about that either, and that's very standard for patients who are on opioids, extended-release opioids for any length of time. So that's how it went for me. And that's why I started looking into this and thinking, you know, there's something wrong here because tens of thousands of people are undergoing these treatments and there doesn't seem to be any context for them and people have no idea what is going to happen to them. But once again, because they make very bad decisions, and certainly I am right up there with them, they make very bad decisions and they jump at what looks possible. And since the book's been out, which is now about 7 weeks, Crooked is now in its third printing, which is extremely exciting. I have heard from dozens of people, probably, I can't say if it's hundreds yet, but it very well could be, who have been through very similar experiences or considerably worse, because many of them have had spinal fusion surgery, which, of course, I did not have, and their outcomes have been awful, and they've often returned for another surgery or even two more surgeries. And the successful outcomes are rare enough for the first surgery and effectively non-existent for subsequent surgeries. And of course, they don't know that, and they have no context for their decisions except for a surgeon saying, well, I didn't really fix that, but maybe I can fix it on the next go-round. So that's a long story, huh?
No, I'm glad you told us.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm looking at this title, which I think is brilliant, Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. You know, when I hear the words back pain industry, it almost sounds like they're not purposely trying to screw you over or to, you know, make you feel worse. But it's sort of that attitude that you just said a moment ago where they're not being completely straight with you and they know people are hurting and they know they'll do anything. Am I on the right track in terms of what you want to get across?
You are in general. I mean, you know, spine surgeons go to school for an extraordinarily long time and they're in training for a very long time. And they didn't enter the business to harm people. That is definitely not the case. But the nature of spine surgery is that there's a very, very small percentage of cases like that involve things like congenital scoliosis or cancer or infection that are truly legitimate reasons for spine surgery and require extraordinary expertise. And most of those cases wind up at teaching hospitals for good reason, because they are extremely challenging to do. And a surgeon could be out there for 10 or 11 hours. And, you know, that's very, very challenging in general. And what happens is, though, there are lots of spine surgeons. There's lots of spine surgeons. And they also, of course, need the work. They basically need the work. So what happens is that they say yes too quickly, and it's not completely their fault either, because patients come in and they say, doctor, I've tried this and this and this and this, and you sent me to physical therapy and it didn't work, and I'm about to lose my job. My wife is leaving me, or my husband. I can't take care of myself at all, and what am I to do? And, you know, those surgeons know that if they don't do the surgery, someone else is going to. And I heard a lot of people, a lot of physicians tell me that flat out, that they felt it would be better if they did the surgery, since it would happen anyway. And the next step down the line was somebody who really, really was not responsible. So it happens, and I think that many spine surgeons right now are having tremendous second thoughts about what they're doing. I've been hearing from numbers of them who have given it up and moved to a rehab focus. You know, I wouldn't say that's like anywhere close to universal, but it's becoming much more difficult to get a health insurance provider to agree to pay for most types of what is considered to be, you know, basically, I could go one way or I could go another way, spinal surgery. In other words, there's no more surgery for the diagnosis of degenerative disc disease because that's not a disease. It's like saying you are going to have surgery for your gray hair. I mean, degenerate discs degenerate. That's what they do as we get older, you know. So many people, we all have them, and some people have pain, and some people attribute the pain to the degenerative discs, but doesn't really make a lot of sense because a great many people with degenerative discs do not have pain. So, you know, surgeons can't use that as an indication anymore, and they are moving to other, even sometimes more far-fetched indications. Instability is a big one these days because there are no numbers. There's nothing quantitative associated with that diagnosis. So a surgeon can say, you know, a spine looks seems to be unstable, has failed physical therapy, you know, two or three times, has had epidural steroid injections, has not had a good outcome from those. And, you know, now the surgeon is building a case for that patient to have surgery. And eventually, based on something like instability, frequently patients will find themselves having spinal fusion.
You know, I want to go back to talking earlier about the physical therapy and the chiropractic, because in 1993, I was hit on my bike by a bread truck and I suffered a lot of soft tissue damage and I had a lot of damage to my serratus anterior. So people like lift up their arm and kind of feel below their armpit and into their back a little bit. And I still have soft tissue damage, which it would have been better if I broke a bone because that would heal. But, you know, with the soft tissue damage, you have scar tissue and it still bothers me to this day. Well, I had a lousy physical therapist at the time, and for years I did. And then, I don't know, all the stars aligned, because at this moment I have the best chiropractor, the best physical therapist, the best Pilates instructor who really know the body, and I feel better than I have in years, even with that occasional spasm. It's interesting. I think it really makes a difference if you have the right team, but it's hard to find. I mean, it took me like 25 years. It wasn't like an overnight thing. And I also do the exercises. I had a knee situation. I swear, 3 months every day, no matter what, I did those exercises and it made a difference. So that's when earlier I was saying that it can make a difference. Now for back pain, I don't know, but I do know that if you can find the right people, but I'm also lucky because my insurance, I can see my chiropractor for $25 or my physical therapist, and that's nice, but not everybody can.
No. You know, it's an interesting point because, yes, it is important to get the right team. Now, you know, there's this book, Crooked, has created quite the brouhaha about the what goes on in the chiropractic world. And
yes,
there is, you know, there are several camps of chiropractors. And one of those camps are chiropractors who have really moved away from adjustments and what they call subluxation into a rehab-focused program. And they are really, really good at it. The ones who have taken seriously study rehab, physiology, kinesiology, you know, I think very highly of them, and I think that they will probably be the future of back care in a lot of ways. There's another type of chiropractor, however, and these are the ones who are giving me all the blowback, of course, but they are focused on adjustment. They want to see you frequently. They tell you such things as, if I don't see you, your spine will deteriorate and you will find yourself disabled. They tell you to be very careful about any number of normal life activities, and that's not necessary. And basically, they put the fear of God in you that if you do not sign up for a long-term contract and show up regularly, bad things will happen. Now, the problem is that most studies of chiropractic are done by chiropractors. And there are very, very high levels of bias. Bias meaning the way that the people who do the study think affects the way that the study is positioned in its outcome. And so, yes, there's a pile of studies. And believe me, every time I turn around, my email box has filled up with a chiropractor's long list of studies. And whenever I see that as an investigative reporter, when I see hundreds or even tens of studies, all of which are done by chiropractors and all of which have a high level of bias, that means only one thing to me, and what it means is BS. So what you need to think about is when you decide to see a chiropractor, there are no regulations affecting what a chiropractor does or does not do. So what is this chiropractor's philosophy? Are you going to be asked to return regularly? Because there is absolutely no indication that continually seeing a chiropractor will benefit your back. Are you going to be asked to have x-rays constantly or very regularly? Because there's no reason to do that either. And there is nothing about those x-rays that actually facilitates chiropractic treatment. So why are they doing them? Well, that's a long story, and you have to go and read Crooked in order to find out how it happened that every chiropractor suddenly had an x-ray machine. So,
you know, I'm laughing because I have to say, I saw the first one you're talking about, and I stopped seeing him because it was like, oh, you have to keep coming, and I need your x-rays. This guy I'm seeing now, unbelievable. He'll explain exactly what's going on. He's so completely aware of the body and this balance and this and this. He's never told me I have to come back. He's never taken x-rays. I've been going every couple of weeks because it's really helped the spasm, but he's never like, when are you coming back? You got to do x-rays. And so I'm trying to get my husband to see him. He's like, no, they're going to pressure me. And I'm like, no, it's not like that.
Well, here's the thing about your spasm. Do you know why we have muscle spasm?
No. Well, okay. Tightness, imbalance,
well,
lack of strength,
we
stress.
Have muscle
that's my
spasms.
Guess.
Well, that's all correct, but it goes a little further than that, you know.
Sure.
Especially involving the muscles around the spine, because that's the focus I have, right? So, you know, your brain is in charge at all times. Your brain is in charge of the safety of all of you. And the muscles around your spine exist to protect your spine. And the reason that they are there to protect your spine is that if they didn't manage your spine, and if the ligaments were not there working in conjunction with your muscles, and if all this didn't work together properly, you would be in great danger. You would be likely to bend in ways that could really hurt you. But your muscles and your ligaments are there, and they manage the bones of your spine, the vertebrae. So once in a while, the message gets completely screwed up. And the message that is sent to your brain is, very bad situation over here, possibly dangerous, what to do? The message your brain sends back is, lock it all down. Lock it all down. I'm considering what to do. When I decide that this is going to be okay, I will let you know. And so that is why you'll suddenly see someone in a yoga class collapse on the floor with muscle spasms, because the brain has gotten a message that danger is afoot and has only decided thus far to lock it all down so that nothing can happen, because the person who is afflicted with muscle spasms on the floor is not going to do anything else. They're just going to stay right there where it's safe, right? So
it makes so much
sense. It can
sense.
Take a while for the brain to say, okay, apparently you are not at risk of death here. Let's see what's going on. But the way to handle a muscle spasm is not what we think. We all want to get in bed to the heating pad, and it's totally understandable. I like to do that too. But the way to handle that is to give those muscles something better to do. I don't know if you have children or if you raise toddlers, but we, you know, many of us have, and we know that when your small child is having a terrible meltdown temper tantrum on the floor of the supermarket normally, have to think of something else for that kid to do. You can't just say, stop it right now. You have to divert, right? So when muscle spasms strike, I think it's the perfect metaphor. You have to say to those muscles, okay, I get it. Now, I'm going to show you how to behave properly. And there are a series of exercises that Stuart McGill, who's one of probably the foremost spine biomechanists in the world, developed. They're very simple. On my website at www.cjramin.com, I actually have a tab in the navigation bar that says Stuart McGill exercises. Very easy to find. And he developed these exercises, which are basically corrective to the brain. They say to the brain, brain, we are going to behave properly now, and you can take off the, you know, red alert, very, very bad things about to happen sign. And this works. And it's worked for so many people. And, you know, you can imagine doing what I do over the last 8 years, I've received endless calls, including from my son's boss about this. And I have sent them all to those same exercises. And most of them have resolved their problem in a matter of a couple of days.
Well, I'm going to be doing that. You know, Catherine, we're just about out of time. I think you're fantastic. The book is Crooked, Outwitting the Back Pain Industry and Getting on the Road to Recovery. I'd love to talk again because there's still so much more to chat about. In the meantime, give us your website one more time.
Okay, so you can find me at www.cjramin.com.
Fantastic. I want to thank everyone for listening to Talk Healthy Today. Check us out on Twitter and Snapchat at Talk Healthy, the number 2 day, Facebook at Talk Healthy Today Podcast, and Instagram at Talk_Healthy_Today. Thanks for listening and stay well.